Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
I used to work nights at a gas station called North Star Mart out near a place called Foster in rural Virginia. I used to drive up from Gloucester, get there at around 10 p.m., and then work all through the night until 6 a.m. when my boss, a dude named Judd, came over to relieve me. Judd lived right next door to the gas station in the big old house that he claimed that he built himself. There was no way that he built that whole thing on his own, but he was far too nice for me to call him out on it, so I just let it be. He was a great boss, too. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Not many folks can say that they had a boss who had done almost anything to keep him safe, but I can, and it makes me feel a little guilty sometimes that I don't head up there to visit him more. But I don't like driving around Foster anymore. I don't like going anywhere near the place. By the end of this story, I think you're going to understand why. I worked at the North Star for 9 months and 3 weeks, working anything from 2 to 5 nights a week, depending on how busy I was at school. Not a single customer in all the time I worked there ever gave me a single ounce of trouble. It was one of the best jobs I ever had in that respect. It was always a little busier on weekends, but during weeknights, I'd sometimes serve only 2 or 3 customers a night and spend the rest of my time watching movies on my iPod, back when that was like a revolutionary thing to do. Judd was really chill like that. He didn't give me a bunch of cleaning tasks, and he didn't give me any busy work at all, actually. And he only ever had one rule. If anyone ever showed up late at night, acting weird in any way, I was to call him right away. It didn't matter if the call woke him and his wife up from the sweetest dreams they'd ever had. If anyone was acting sketch, Judd wanted to know about it.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. I figured that was fair enough. The gas station was Judd's whole life. It was his retirement plan, so if it went up in flames, well, you see where I'm going with this. So even though it felt slightly emasculating, as in I felt like I could take care of the station myself, I agreed to give Judd a call every time there was any disturbances. When he first told me about his little golden rule, I'd be lying if I said that it didn't make me a little nervous, I guess. It suggested that there were a lot of weird people who came by the gas station at night, but that couldn't have been further from the truth. Like I said, 9 whole months and not a single instance of weird or disturbing behavior. And then one night, it happened. I was in the back office one night, splitting my attention between security monitors and a copy of The Dark Knight Rises, when I suddenly saw a lone figure approaching the gas station. We had 3 cameras. One facing the pumps, one facing the approach to the store, and a third which allowed me to watch the inside of the store from the back office. I can see the guy walking towards the store, past the pumps, and then into the view of the second camera, but then instead of walking into the store like literally everybody else, he stops dead outside the door. He's right in the view of the second camera, so I'm looking at this guy fairly close up, and he looked like a perfectly regular rural Virginian dad type. He looked like he had work boots on, some faded jeans, and a baseball cap with some kind of hunting or fishing logo on it. Literally the most unremarkable looking guy that could ever walk through our door. But his behavior most definitely got my attention. I guess it's not entirely true that nothing weird ever happened, because there was one previous occasion where I called Judd in the middle of the night. Some crazy lady was screaming like a demon out near the pumps. It was a Saturday, and it had to be maybe 4 to 4:30 in the morning, but just like Judd said, I gave him a call at his house. I told him about the lady and how her screaming was freaking me out. He asked for a description, I gave him one, and then he tells me, "Oh, that's just Rhonda liquored up on payday. She'll head home once she's tired herself out." And then you know what? She did. She eventually stopped screaming and then just kind of walked off, like she was done with that night's performance. Anyway, the guy in the sporting goods cap stopped dead and just stood there in front of the camera, not moving a muscle. Not nearly as freaky as screaming like a banshee, but still weird nonetheless. I figured he was, I don't know, taking a moment to think or something. But then, as I'm watching him, his head starts slowly moving, turning his neck until he's staring into the camera lens. I know it was just an illusion, but it felt like he was staring directly at me, and that was easily one of the most unnerving sensations I've ever experienced. Once the guy's behavior reached a concerning level of weird, I grabbed the phone and called Judd. I didn't even feel emasculated doing it either. Whatever that guy's problem was, it wasn't meth. It was something way scarier than that. Judd picked up the phone, then once again, he asked me to describe the person acting weird. I started describing the guy, and then the next thing, Judd slams the phone down. I look back at the screen and the guy's disappeared from view, but he's not in the store either, so I'm thinking, where the hell's he gone? But at the same time, I'm also thinking, why did Judd just slam that phone down on me? He told me to call him if something weird started to happen, and the first time he sounded sleepy but pretty calm, so I was wondering what was so different about that time, when I suddenly see him on the monitors. Judd was running towards the gas station in nothing but his boxer shorts and a wife beater, and he was carrying a shotgun in his hands. He burst into the store and asked me where he is. Then when I say the guy just disappeared, and that I think he just walked off, Judd runs past me into the office to check the monitors. I'm freaking out too, because what the hell is he carrying that shotgun for? But no matter how many times I asked him what's going on, he kept silencing me and telling me that I needed to concentrate as he ran back to the security footage to get a look at the guy's face. I watched him, rewinding the footage until he finally found what he was looking for, and when he did, I watched Judd turn completely pale. Whoever it was, Judd was terrified of him. So terrified that he felt the need to come running over with a shotgun to protect me, and then, that scared the hell out of me too. Judd sent me home that night after calling the cops, and the next day, he called to say that he'd understand if I didn't want to come back to work. I asked just one time if he could tell me who the man was, and Judd paused, and then repeated the part about understanding if I didn't want to come back. I thanked him for the job, wished him luck, and then just hung up. Like I said earlier, I still feel guilty about not going up to see him more. He was a great guy and a great boss, but without knowing who that guy was, without knowing why Judd was so scared of him, I couldn't put myself in the position of working for him anymore. I didn't want to die for some stupid gas station job, no matter how cool my boss was. And if there was a guy out there who scared the hell out of one of the toughest sons of bitches I'd ever known, then what chance in hell did I have? So I worked at a domestic violence shelter, and I've seen a lot of stuff. Some paranormal, some just the truest chills of human nature. One of these instances was when a woman came to the rather large shelter that I was working at after leaving her partner. Pretty typical, only her partner was an ex-military sniper. Naturally, she came in the weeks our regular night shift workers were off on vacation, so I had been voluntold to take off my regular day shifts and have the pleasure of working alone. Now I start my shift, nothing much to note, help the residents get their medications, do some chores while I watch some Netflix. Usually I'm a horror junkie, but I would never watch it at work, mostly because I would become extra jumpy and I was certain that the place was actually haunted. As there were women who had passed in the building, but most of the spirits were chill, and I'm certain that they were messing with me at times. Anyways, at the time, our office had windows that looked out onto our tall pine trees in the backyard, designed to give us privacy for our residents' sake. However, at night, all you could see was darkness leering at you with no shielding from curtains. Naturally, our backs were turned to the window, making us feel pretty vulnerable. The windows at least had tints, but it didn't matter because we could still see outside, and anything outside could see us. At this point in my job, I had seen multiple residents' ex-partners who they had fled, trying to peek in or even break in, but nothing compared to this dark night with not even a glimmer of moonlight. So I went to complete my assigned chores, hoping to finish them and then relax until everyone woke up in the morning. I took my time in the basement where most of my chores were. The basement was the floor below my office where the residents stayed, and when I returned, I started getting cozy for my shift. I wrapped myself in a blanket, put on some goofy rom-com, and just relaxed. And this is until I felt like I was being watched. I had a habit of always feeling like something was watching me, though, as I grew up in a house with a similar window situation and was just a very anxious kid. I initially brushed it off as me being paranoid, which wasn't a bad thing, but I checked the many cameras that we had and didn't notice anything out of place inside or out. I continued snacking and watching my movie, and at around 2 a.m., when most residents were asleep, one of them knocked on the office door. This always spooked me at night, but I went to answer it. It was one of the residents, looking very panicked. She explained that she believed that she had heard someone out in the backyard while she was in her room and was worried that it was one of their ex-partners. The residents all had windows that could open to the backyard, too small for anyone, but a small child could fit through, but still. So I double-checked with this resident that hers was closed, and we had a policy that all windows be closed at night, especially at curfew, which was midnight. She said hers was closed, but that it sounded like someone was in the backyard. I suggested that she go to her room, close the blinds, and I would look into it. Again, I peered outside into the darkness, both on the cameras and with my own eyes, and I saw nothing out of place, but felt an absolute pit in my stomach as the darkness kind of stared back. I let this woman know that I didn't see anything but would check regularly. She thanked me and said that maybe she was paranoid. I reassured her that the building was secure but understood her fear. One thing about working at a shelter is that even if you're scared, you can't show it to the residents or they panic, rightfully so, tenfold. So despite my stomach in knots, I kept a calm and cool demeanor. As soon as I returned to the office at about 3:30 a.m., I felt a little bit better and went to sit down. And that's when I noticed something dash into the pine trees. Absolutely petrified and going against my human nature, which screamed to bolt like a madman, I went to investigate near the window. I cautiously crawled because I didn't want to be seen by some wild man out there. I couldn't see anyone, but I again felt that gaze and noticed one of the pines move. When I say that I had never called the police quicker, I mean it. Luckily, because my workplace was well known by the police, they arrived pretty quickly. I met them at the front door and explained the situation and mentioned the woman with an ex-military partner. The police fanned out and looked around the pines. Luckily, no one was found, but they did find that something had disturbed the pine trees, and they did find one of those sort of fake leave-slash-camouflage suits. I think they're called a ghillie suit. And right then, they might as well have just commanded me to poop my pants. They suggested that it was possible someone with a military background was in the pine trees trying to scope out the shelter, and I felt like I had just lived three lives in one night. The police said that it appeared the person had left, likely after seeing the flashing red and blue lights. They then left and said to call back if I felt unsafe again. The rest of the night was uneasy until my manager and other co-workers came in. Luckily, I had never seen curtains put up so quickly and security guards hired. And this happened while the woman and another resident with an ex in Hell's Angels were no longer with us. I have no certainty that it was that ex-military person, but based on how I felt that I was being stalked like prey and how she had described her ex-partner, it truly did feel like him.
Hey guys, thanks so much for all the support. If you haven't subscribed to the channel yet, please feel free to do so. Have you heard of the saying, all is fair in love and war? But what if everything is not fair? What if the limits were crossed to win love and war? Would you say then too that all is fair? I don't think so. The story I am about to tell you is about a story that I covered in my early times as a reporter. It's about someone who did every possible thing to win both love and the war. It was about 7 years ago. I had just joined this news channel a few days ago as an investigative journalist, and as my training was completed, I was assigned my first story to cover. It was about a love affair of a famous businessman whose mistress, Catherine, had committed suicide. So my story had to revolve around the truth about what happened in that case. My boss helped me get into the office where Catherine used to work as an undercover employee, and that was where I met this guy named Bob, who looked like a total wreck after Catherine's death. I got to know through the other employees that Bob and Catherine were dating for the past 5 years, and he was good to her during the time they were dating. But this information led to the question that if he was so good to her, then why was she having an affair that led her to commit suicide? People were sympathetic toward Bob, but no one suspected him even once of killing Catherine. I mean, come on people, she cheated on him. How is it that no one suspected him? Well, doesn't matter, because he was on the top of my suspect list, so I started watching him. One day out of the blue, Bob asked me if I wanted to have a coffee with him. I was kind of confused by his sudden approach, but still, I agreed, and followed him to the cafe outside the company during lunchtime. Since it was a perfect opportunity for me to get the information from him that I needed, I wore a wire. "Why are you so interested in Catherine's affair?" he asked the moment we sat down at the table. "Excuse me?" I asked with a confused expression on my face. "Oh, don't play coy with me. I've heard you going around asking about Catherine's affair with the chairman. It was bad enough that she had to suffer with such rumors when she was alive, and now you're bringing it up again after her death too?"
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Huh, Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
He said in an angry low tone, which sounded like a warning. "What do you mean it was a rumor?" I asked. "Well, of course it was a rumor. She got promoted as chairman's secretary, so people started saying she seduced him to get that position, but I never once doubted her." He stopped speaking when the waiter came with the coffee, and I waited for him to leave because I had questions for him. "Is that why she committed suicide?" I asked the moment the waiter left. "No. What makes you think she committed suicide?" "She was murdered." He looked me in the eyes and said in a calm tone, "Murdered?" I was dumbfounded by what he had just told me. "Enough about that. Now tell me, why are you running around your mouth and asking questions about her?" He leaned back and asked in the same calm voice he had since we arrived at the cafe. For some reason, it was terrifying the hell out of me. Luckily, I had a solid story prepared as an excuse if someone were to get suspicious of me, so I used it. I told him that the two of us used to be best friends back in Dunfermline, where she used to live during the time of her high school. And when I found out about her suicide, I wanted to know the truth about what happened. It seemed like he believed me, and then we got back to the office. I couldn't shake it off my mind, the way he told me about her girlfriend's murder calmly. And what surprised me even more was that he hadn't reported it to the police yet. After that little conversation of ours, he went back to being hostile toward me, the way he had been since my first day in this office. Anyway, it was the day I was working overtime, and no one was around at that hour, when I heard someone's voice coming from the chairman's office. It was hard to figure out who it was and what they were talking about, so I went a little closer to eavesdrop. "Watch your mouth, brother, or else I might slip out about us sharing the same DNA to the media. It's not the only secret that I know about you." It was Dan's voice that I recognized in an instant. "What do you want, Daniel? Why are you doing this?" The chairman's voice sounded tired, as if he was on the effect of some sort of drug. "What else do you think? I want to win back what was supposed to be mine, so just sign these papers and your secret will be safe with me." Dan's tone was the same terrifyingly calm as before. "Why are you doing this, Dan? First you killed Catherine just because she dumped you, and now you're doing this." "I killed her? No. No, you can't put this on me, Nathan. I loved her. She was only dumping me because you brainwashed her against me. So her blood is on your hands. I was never going to let you have her through deceptions. That's why I killed her. Now sign this quietly." I couldn't believe what I had just heard. I wasn't able to record the entire conversation, but I managed to record Dan's confession about murdering Catherine. After a few more minutes of listening to their conversation, I left because my cell phone started vibrating and I couldn't risk getting found out. As soon as I left the office building, I gave a call back to the director and told him that I was finished with the story I needed. The next day, the story about Dan being the murderer, along with him being the chairman's brother, was shown live on our news channel. But it was soon followed by the news of another suicide that was of none other than Dan himself. I did not get his story this time, but I received a thank you letter from the chairman's wife, which said, "Thank you for your support and for helping my husband win this." I checked the envelope, and it had a check for $1 million in it. I smiled, thinking about how I edited out the part of the recording about Chairman Nathan's wife's involvement in Catherine's murder. She was the assistant director of the company, and when I was leaving the building that night, she caught me. Dan did not act on his own. Carla was the one who manipulated him into thinking that it would be better to kill her instead of letting Nathan have her. She made a pretty good deal with me. She told me if I would be able to dump it all on Dan, that she would give me enough money that would satisfy me. Well, it was my first job, and I needed the money, so I accepted her offer. I won't say I don't regret it. I do, sometimes, but not that much. It's because I know that she did it for love, and she would have gotten out of this by using her money anyway, so why would I feel guilty about something that has nothing to do with me? She won the war her husband was having with his brother. So as a result, she won her love back as well, and I got the money I needed. I would not call this fair. Instead, an unfair win-win situation.
No movie will ever compare to the hell that I've gone through the last year. The ordeal seems like it's been one long waking nightmare. It all began normally enough. I just recently got out of a long-term relationship and wasn't looking for anything serious. I figured that I'd give Tinder a shot. It didn't take long for me to get a few matches. I chose the hottest one and we agreed to meet a week later. The date went so well that we decided to do it again, and this became a regular thing until the fourth date. It was beginning to look as if it may grow into something more in spite of my original intentions. As the fourth date wrapped up, I invited her back to my place for a drink, She agreed, and things soon got hot and heavy, as they say. We were mere seconds away from taking things all the way when she broke down. I was confused. I'm not an aggressive partner, and her behavior up to that point had been very receptive. I asked what was wrong, and she said that she had been assaulted by a previous boyfriend. It had been several years since she thought that she had moved past it. I felt bad for her, yet still kind of frustrated, and she got up and dressed quickly. I'll admit, it was, like I said, frustrating, but there was little I could do, and I understood where she was coming from. I called her an Uber, and she left me with a difficult decision to make. After a long, sleepless night, I decided to just kind of end things there. Some of you reading this may call me cruel, but I couldn't really see another option. Things appeared to just be at an impasse, you know? I wasn't going to wait around until she determined that she was ready, and I sure wasn't going to pressure her into anything, obviously. I told myself that it was for the best. I'd never wanted to jump right into another relationship so quickly. That wouldn't benefit either of us, and I broke things off as kindly as I could. That night never came up. I stressed how I'd felt I'd rushed into things too quickly, and naturally she was a bit upset, but gave no indication of actually being angry. I wished her a happy future and just bid her a goodbye. And normally, that's where it would have ended. I took a month off from dating and Tinder and all that, and when I came back, I matched with a beautiful graduate student just looking to have a good time. This was more of what I was looking for. We met for drinks and hit it off. I went home happy with a spring in my step and a gleam in my eyes, they say. And maybe 2 days passed when I got a call from a neighbor. He informed me that there were leaflets posted all around our neighborhood, calling me an attempted predator. I thought this was his idea of some sick joke, and definitely not a good one. I laughed, but he assured me that this wasn't a laughing matter. I demanded proof, and a few minutes later he came to my door with a bright yellow piece of paper, and it claimed the following. On the night of Friday, November 19th, 2021, I was invited on a dinner date with Mr. My Name. After being plied with many glasses of wine, I was pressured into joining him at his home. Although I was clearly unable to consent, Mr. My Name attempted to coax me into his bed. When I refused his advances, he became enraged and threw me onto the street in the middle of the night. Please make sure all your female friends are made aware of the danger they may face by dating this manipulative monster. I can't begin to describe the anger that I felt in that moment. It was made worse when the neighbor asked me if it was true. Of course it wasn't, but when someone asks that type of question, it's a good indication that they believe it. Rather than strangle him, I did my best to assure him it was not. And his reception was less than convincing, but I had more pressing problems at that second. I had to get all those flyers, or whatever you call them, before any more impressionable idiots saw them. I spent most of the day pulling them from light poles and bulletin boards all over town. I'm still not sure if I got them all, and I counted over 200 when all was said and done. Then, out of nowhere, I discovered that I had been banned from Tinder after someone filed a complaint against me. My life felt like it was spiraling out of control, and I was desperate to stop it any way I could. What came next was probably the biggest mistake I'd made during this entire ordeal. I worked myself into such a muddle I did the one thing I shouldn't have. I contacted her via text message to confront her. She promised to retract her claims if I agreed to meet her face to face. And I took the bait like a sucker and drove to her house. We sat down at her kitchen table where she explained how hurt she felt. I wasn't interested in hearing any of it, but I was willing to suffer to save my good name. While she did so, she kept a glass of wine close at hand. She had clearly been drinking even before I arrived. After an hour, everything appeared to be handled. As I prepared to leave, she began coming on to me, and I mean in a very obvious manner, and I almost gave in, but then I remembered our previous problem and I shut her down. She was not pleased. She hissed and walked off toward the kitchen. I figured that she was getting some more wine, and it seemed like a great time to sneak away. I was putting on my jacket when a crash came from the kitchen. I hurried in to see what the matter was and was met by a shrill screeching.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
She rushed towards me with a stem of a broken wine glass and stabbed me with it. She retracted the jagged stem from the wound and snarled like some freaking animal. I was in shock, and I froze for a brief moment, unsure of how to react. Then she lunged at me again, just missing, and I took off. She pursued me out to my car and pounded on it as I sped off, and I just drove straight to the hospital, calling 911 as I drove. I informed the dispatcher which hospital I could be found at if the police needed to speak to me, and sure enough, an officer arrived as I was being treated for my injury. Luckily for me, she hadn't hit any major arteries or organs or anything like that. And the cop let me know that my assailant had been arrested, but what came next was a complete surprise. I was shocked to learn that she had a previous conviction for stalking and assault, and I surmised that it was a similar situation. Monday came around, and despite what I had hoped, my attacker was given bail. She paid and was out in time for dinner. I was furious and gave the assistant DA a piece of my mind. And while I waited for the trial day to arrive, I remained in a constant state of fear. I could swear that I saw her once or twice over that period, but I was in such a frazzled state that it was possibly my imagination. She became all I thought about. My work suffered. Even in my dreams, she often took center stage. She refused several plea deals and insisted the jury would acquit her. I know it was all a stall tactic, and she was assembling all the elements that she would need to what I thought would be to disappear. And the first rumblings began during jury selection. She had not been present for the procedure. Although she wasn't required to be, it didn't bode well. Then when the trial began in earnest, her lawyer was finally forced to admit that he had lost contact with his client several weeks prior. Now today is October 28th as I write this, and she's been missing almost 2 months. I sit around wondering what my future may hold. Hopefully she's done the wise thing and is currently laying low halfway around the world, or something. On the surface, that appears to be the case. Yet for some reason, I'm not totally convinced. My former love interest is a highly successful and intelligent woman. It's largely what drew her to me from the beginning. I have a creeping suspicion that she may be focusing her vast resources into getting back at me. Whatever form that may take, I'm not really sure. Naturally, I fear she'll go to the conventional route and just end my life, likely by her own hand, maybe another stabbing. However, she is more than capable to go even further and extend my suffering indefinitely. And this is why I'm going to all the trouble to post my side of the story. I'm well aware I probably come off as a jerk in some circumstances, but I don't care. I just want a record of the truth to be available publicly should I disappear. My lawyer also has a copy in case I'm no longer around to testify on my own behalf. It's doubtless that law enforcement will eventually catch up with her at some point. I'm concerned it will be too late for me, though. So if you learn of the death or a disappearance of some unknown New York State attorney through the media, please remember what you read here.
The haunting of the Westminster Hotel is one of the most weird and intricate, and at the same time, saddening horror story that I have heard about. It was 1920, And as the First World War came to an end and a lot of rich people were sending their children to prime colleges to get them the best education. And the elites, even though they had the upper hand during the war, and even after it while everyone else suffered, they were much more sadistic and entitled than everyone else, even though they had everything they could. During the period of 1920 and 1924, the Westminster Hostel faced the horrible bullying case of one Jack Delphi. He was a student, a new student, that had recently moved all the way from France. He was raised by a single mother, and much of her influence was rubbed on Jack, and her mother wanted Jack to have a different, rather much manlier experience, so she transferred her to the Westminster Hotel, the hotel that was known for its rigorous and manlier training schedules. It was a place to turn the boys into men, and Jack's mother thought it was the positive change that her boy probably needed. And wrongfully, she came to regret her decision. The first week for Jack was easy settling, and it seemed as if he would be easy to mingle in with the boys, as everyone seemed to be of same societal stature, so there were no complexes to worry about. As Jack settled in, he found his friendship with Thomas quite useful, and they got very close during their stay in the hotel. And then one night, when Jack and Thomas were alone in the hostel, they both opened up their sexuality and kissed. The boys spend the night together, and Jack was happy that he met Thomas, and they became friends and were able to share their feelings and thoughts. And then next day, Jack woke up to his worst day. He saw that Thomas was gone. Moreover, everyone in the hostel was eyeing him and laughing. He had no idea as to what was going on until one of the most senior boys came in, held him by his throat, and threatened his life, and asked him if he was a little faggot boy. At first, Jack ignored it, but then he said that Thomas had told them everything, that Jack tried to kiss him. Thomas, trying to save himself from any doubts, threw Jack under the bus. Jack refused to admit the accusations. It wasn't until the afternoon assembly, when Jack was confronted by the bullies, who wanted him to admit he was gay, but he didn't, so they beat him instead and went away. Come the night, everyone surrounded his bed, and as he did, the biggest bully of them all came closer to him and asked if he was gay, and that if he admits it, he will be left with. So he did it, and he admitted that he was. Everybody just went away as the bully eyed everyone else to leave him alone. It was around 2 in the night when Jack got up to visit the bathroom. There, he was confronted by Dan, the biggest bully in the school. He grabbed Jack by the throat and pinned him to the wall while Andrew, another bully, Andrew pushed him to the bathroom floor as they muffled his voice with a piece of cloth, and they took turns violating Jack as Jack was horrified and in tears. They left as soon as they were done, and Jack just stood there in shock and in pain. Next morning when everyone woke up, they found Jack hanging to the fan above his bed. It was an apparent suicide, and it was concluded that the reason for suicide was homosexuality, and Thomas was blamed for it. The hostel went on going without a conscience, and it kept it relevant through all the evil that it was harboring. It was clear that Jack was a victim, but seeing that homosexuality was perceived a crime back then, no one really cared enough. And about a month later is when the haunting in the Westminster Hotel started.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
When a student claimed that they seen Jack, the certainty to the claims were confirmed when Thomas, Andrew, and Dan were brutally killed in bizarre accidents. Some say that it was just a crazy coincidence, while some claim that it was in fact Jack taking revenge from people who were responsible for his death.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.